afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. I have to tell you, if you missed the first hour, you better go back to the archive and listen. Robert will have it all cut up. It'll be uninterrupted. It's free to listen to. It's an MP3 file. You can download it, share it. I don't care what you do with it, but please get this program out to people because this information is just not really being made public.
No.
We have some really good scientists working on the effects of cannabis, and the industry is busy telling us that it's great and natural and blah, blah, blah. So if you actually still believe those things, I think you should listen to the show two times, at least two times. I will replace your medical marijuana prescription with listening to this show two times. Okay, I can't really do that, but I'm just going to pretend.
Yeah.
So now that I roped our sponsor in, you want to tell people who they are?
Yeah, our sponsor is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape Machinery is probably the largest John Deere dealer now in Northern California. In fact, I think they might be the only one in Northern California now. But go by and see him if you're looking for service parts, need a new tractor, implements. They got it all going on up there. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they do everything John Deere, steel, Honda. They've got it all. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Snazzy. Well, our guest today is Dr. Stuart Rees, and he is a researcher. He not only works with patients, but he is a researcher. He's a professor of medicine at the University of Western Australia and the Edith Cowan University, which are both near Perth in Western Australia. So we're way out on a limb today. We're using Zoom, and I don't know. Technology has not been kind to us over the years.
No, no.
But today and today only.
Today it's going to work flawlessly.
Today it's worked out really, really well. And I'm really glad it has, because this is a message that really needs to get out there as people are being lured more and more and more into that cannabis wasteland where it's good for everything. You know, you should give it to your dog. And just in case you thought CBD was great.
Yeah,
and you
thought, that's the one that kind of surprised me, because
you thought hemp was great. Yeah. And it's just the THC. It's just the THC that's bad. Dr. Rees, since we're not scientists, what'd you call it? You called it cannabidiol 9 or somebody's 9. That's the THC that makes people high. But the rest of it still has all the bad stuff.
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. You got that.
It's the the English major's version is it still has all the bad stuff.
Yeah. And yet they retail it at your major retailers. Over the counter.
Yeah. So if people are using this as a cream, maybe they're not smoking it or eating it. Maybe it's a cream of some sort or something like that. This is all, I mean, obviously your largest organ is the skin. I did pass that part of science. I do know that. But this is all being absorbed into the skin and basically going to have the same effect on the genome as all the things that you've described. Is that true?
Yes, ma'am. That's right. That's right. Remember, it's a dose-related effect, and the cannabinoids are fat-soluble, so they build up in the fat, and it exponentiates at high dose. So for a regular smoker, they say that for a regular smoker who's smoking a lot, he needs to be off the cannabis. He needs to have a 6-month break from it before you can no longer detect it in his urine, because it's soaked into his fat stores so deeply. And of course, the brain's largely made of fat, all the insulation is layers of fat, so it soaks into the brain as well. So it's the people who use it, just say you use it every day on your skin, you think about the cumulative dose of that and the build up plus this exponential dose response effect at the high end of the dosing range, which obviously we're getting into in these legal paradigms, right? You've got what we talked about before. You've got a higher prevalence of use, more people using, a higher intensity of use, more people using daily, and higher THC and CBD concentrations. So you're leapfrogging right into the exponential genotox dose response range, which is where the wheels really fall off.
And I think the term that you, I don't know if you coined it, but as far as we're concerned, you coined it. This is like a lawnmower for your chromosomes.
Yeah, you could call it a lawnmower for chromosomes. Do you guys have whippersnippers in the U.S., but I don't know what you call them. You call them whippersnippers?
No.
Like a weed whacker? Like the thing that has like the little thing that spins around and chops
around,
weeds?
Yeah. Is that what you call it? A weed whacker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I really think it's like a weed whacker for chromosomes, right? But I didn't know what the American term is. In Australia, we'd call it a whippersnipper. But maybe it's
like
a weed whacker or a lawnmower for chromosomes. You think about it, 70 chromosomal arms amputated, 6.5 times faster than controls, all in just 13 years. I mean, this is chromosomal magic for making chromosomes virtually disappear. I mean, it's amazing.
Wow.
What? I was thinking about it during the break. What would this be like? I mean, can you compare this to anything else?
Yeah, I can. It's very like the known genotoxins, right? I mean, you go back to 1999, Gabriel Nahas, in his studies, the positive control was mitomycin C, which is the known genotoxin. It's a cancer drug. It's so dangerous it's hardly used anymore, except for the worst cancers. And the cannabinoids were testing positive right up there with them. In terms of birth defects, cannabis actually has, of the 31 birth defects that were described with thalidomide, cannabis causes 21, which is about 67%.
Wow.
Do that again. Thalidomide caused 31 birth defects.
And cannabis causes 21 of those 31. Right? So 67%, you can compare it to thalidomide, right? Of the 13 mechanisms of action in the cells that thalidomide has, cannabis does 12. So you can compare it to thalidomide. You can compare it to any known major genotoxin. This is major genotoxin. So this is a very big effect. We talked a minute ago about testicular cancer, but we published a couple of years ago looking at females because it's not good for females either, and females have menopause. Now, females have a hormonal cycle. They have a monthly cycle. The ovaries produce estrogen and progesterone. This is controlled from the brain. The two reproductive hormones coming out of the brain is FSH and LH, luteinizing hormone, follicle stimulating hormone. In young women, the LH is higher than the FSH. Around the time of the menopause, the ratio inverts and the FSH becomes higher than the LH, so that the FSH-LH ratio inversion is a metric of the perimenopause. And we studied this in a couple of hundred opiate and cannabinoid addicts a couple of years ago and published, and we found a 60% reduction in that metric of reproductive lifespan in females, right? So instead of going through the inversion point, the hormonal inversion point at 46 years, they went through to 28 years, right? Which is sick as a 60% reduction in the reproductive fertility period in females. So in other words, it's bad for the males, as we said before, and it's a disaster for females because, of course, when they lose their hormones, And they get into a pseudo perimenopausal state, the wheels fall off their health in a huge way. That's one of the reasons why you see it clinically really dramatically in these people. And in their 30s and 40s, the female patients who work with cannabis, they look really shocking. And now we've put our finger on some biological metrics. You can actually measure that and quantify it. We found a 60% reduction in that fertile period by that metric. It was published a couple of years ago.
So basically, that's a 60% reduction in their ability to get pregnant.
Yeah, and it's a collapse. It represents a collapse of the normal premenopausal hormone milieu. Cannabis is associated with reduced fertility in males and females, and obviously, that is a key reproductive metric, and that collapses. You think about it, comes down from 46 to 28. Right. And if you say that, you know, it really gets going about the age of 15, then you can calculate the difference. That's 13 years versus 31 years. And so you get this massive 60% drop. So it's a train wreck for males. It's a train wreck for females. And you're talking about putting this stuff in the food chain, which is what's obviously going on de facto through the water table, and through the livestock, and without telling people and without their consent. And you're trashing the biological crown jewels, the DNA, the information at the heart of every cell. As I said to you, not since 1957 has the known genotoxin been marketed just for cash, which is what's going down now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
that's,
the and that's the money is mind blowing. So anybody who thinks anybody who still thinks this, it never listens to our show. So I hope that you will tune in more often and or go to the pot tab on the top of our webpage, where you can catch up on all of this great stuff. But you can't make that kind of money legally, growing marijuana, too many restrictions and all that. I mean, they thought that they would have all these people taking out, business licenses and growing it legally and it would get, well, yeah, I don't know if they really thought it was going to happen, but that's what they said.
Well, they thought there was going to be a big tax influx.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're going to make a bunch of money and it's going to funnel toward law enforcement and our towns.
And none of that happened.
Get rid of all the black market. And all it really did was explode the black market. And people are making billions.
And legalize it recreationally to make the demand even higher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had a bust here a few weeks ago, Dr. Reese. It was like the final product, 250 tons of product with an estimated value of like $500 million, all illegal. So anybody who thinks, we just legalize it and that solves the problem.
Yeah, it was destined for, I think, the East Coast or something.
Actually, in effect, California has sort of legalized it. I mean, you look at – when you watch Cartelville, the one sheriff explains it and he says – why would you grow illegal marijuana anywhere but California? It's a misdemeanor with a $500 fine. So you could make millions of dollars, and if you get caught, you have a misdemeanor and a $500 fine. Or you could grow it legally. It would cost you a fortune, and you'd never get the misdemeanor and the $500 fine. I mean, just the incentive isn't there.
Right.
We've incentivized the illegal. Okay, so tell me this. What about all this food that has, you know, hemp seeds and all that stuff in it. That's all big now. Hemp bread. I see it everywhere.
Oh, it's in shampoo. It's in everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Shampoo and all that stuff. Is that all still the same stuff?
Yes, ma'am. That is the same stuff.
Oh, my God.
Think about this. I said at the beginning, cannabinoid genotoxicity is not controversial. It's not controversial. It's known. It's accepted by the industry. Right. And let me say this. It seems to me that's why we have to have a legal cannabis process, because it has to get around the FDA regs, which protect the community, because they know it would fail those tests, the genotoxic tests that protect the community. In other words, this has all been done deliberately to bypass the genotoxic safeguard. And now what our studies are showing is that the genotoxic outcomes and the downstream things of genotoxic cancer, aging, and birth defects are far worse than anyone's ever imagined. The cannabis genotoxicity is the reason we have to have, you know, the corruption of the ballot process with the propaganda campaign. That is the reason we have this whole, you know, thing sweeping the country, the U.S., from west coast to east, because they know the genotoxicity is true, and the community, no one in the community understands what genotoxicity is about, understands what we actually mean when we say, this trashes the genome, because when you start to unpack that concept, the only reaction you can have is, oh, my goodness, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we kind of read the bit that you had sent us, and we thought, okay, we have no idea what he's talking about. But when you start talking about thalidomide and the tight profile to thalidomide and the same outcome and all that – okay, yes. You might be in your 20s and not know that, but that information is available. I mean, go look that up.
Yeah.
That's
well, if you think about it, if you as a drug manufacturer introduced a drug that had had to pass the FDA, say, and it had these types
of, never happened.
It would never get passed. It would never make it to market. But yet we allow this to enter our society because of the money.
As a safe, natural alternative, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, our whole thing, because we've spoken with Heidi Swan, who I think is how we got connected with you, and, you know, they talk about the psychosis and all those kinds of things, the mental health implications of the use of this whole thing. But I'm sorry, taking a, what do you call it, a whirly trimmer? No, what's your weed whacker called? A whippersnipper. It's a whippersnipper. You're going to take a whippersnipper to your chromosomes.
Yeah.
Might want to think that through. I mean, most people would not want to sign on to that. We have to take a really quick break here. We will be, easy for me to say, we will be right back with our guest, Dr. Stuart Reese. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Say whippersnipper.
Hold on, I
got to
push
fast.
The button. Yeah, stall for time.
There ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got minds to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Until we close our eyes for good. Say the truth will set you free. Hello, hello, let me tell you what it's like to be a zero, zero. Let me show you what it's like to always feel, feel. Like I'm empty and there's nothing really real, real. I'm looking for the way out. Hello, hello, let me tell you what it's like to be a zero, zero. Let me show you what it's like to never feel, feel. Like I'm good enough for anything that's real, real. I'm looking for the way out.
That's what you have to look forward to in long-term cannabis use. I found that little gem last night. You can grow up and be a zero.
Yeah.
It's probably all the chromosomes you'll have left.
Yeah.
If you get the whippersnipper on them.
And you'll be okay with it.
Yeah, and you'll never know. You'll never know it happened. Because yeah. You stored it all in the fat cells in your brain, you dummy. Okay, so we're curious about sitting here talking during the break. We're curious about the length of use. So if somebody smokes pot, obviously once, that's tremendously different than if they use it every day for 10 years. But what did you find? Like, what was the correlation on the term, the length of use? Anything?
Yes, ma'am. It gets back to the cumulative dose business we talked about and the way cannabis builds up in the body. Certainly with testicular cancer, there's been a dose response link reported in the literature. With the amount of time smoked, with the numbers smoked, with the intensity of smoke, and with the number of years smoked. And it's all about the cumulative dose and getting up to that exponential dose range at the higher levels, which obviously under a legal paradigm, you're going to do more and more through increased duration of smoke, increased intensity of smoke, daily use, and increased concentration of THC, increased concentration of many of the cannabinoids. So. Anything that increases your cumulative cannabinoid. One very bright light in all of the story though recently, and that was came out from the Duke University group, who showed that when you stop cannabis smoking, I think it was about 17 weeks later, a lot of the epigenetic, a lot of the gene regulatory damage reverses back towards normal. So it's not a one-way street. You know, it's always about the cumulative dose exposure. So anything that increases your cumulative dose exposure, whether through increased length of years of smoking or secondhand smoke or whatever it is, it's always cumulative dose exposure. It's the total cannabinoid exposure, which is genotoxin. The things that get you up in that high dose exponential area, that's where the really serious damage is going to be seen commonly.
So, in fact,
I just talk about that for a minute.
I'm sorry.
I just speak about that for a minute. I mean, obviously, I'm a doctor and an academic, so I have to be careful what I say. And I was talking to one of my patients recently about this, one of my patients who comes from a high drug-using area. And I said, we're worried that maybe 10% of the babies who would have their brain function altered in some way. And he said, doctor, no, you're wrong. It's not 10%, maybe 70%, maybe 80% of those who smoke cannabis seriously. You know, and I mean, the recent National Survey of Drug Use and Health from SAMHSA, I think showed hundreds of thousands of women in the U.S. smoking cannabis when they're pregnant their first trimester, right? And you're talking about my patients who come from those areas telling me, doc, it's 70 or 80% of those kids. Like in Australia, there's a whole school in Adelaide, which is in South Australia, devoted just to autistic kids. A whole school just for autistic.
Wow.
Now, we didn't have that 20 years ago, right? And see, when I was on the radio debating with this cannabis advocate recently, he said, goodness me, Dr. Rich, you think the wheels are falling off the culture. Well, I sort of said, well, thank you for asking, because when you start to measure it, maybe they are. You know, you look at all these birth defects rising. Look at, you know, did you know the rate of testicle cancer in the U.S. doubled from 1975 to now? The rate of pediatric cancer went up 50%, right? Cannabis has been linked with the commonest cancer in adults, which is breast cancer, the commonest cancer in kids, which is acute lymphoid leukemia. It's been shown to drive pediatric the rise in 62 defects that is tracked in the U.S. This is big news, and no one's looking, no one's measuring. It's all based on the don't ask, don't tell policy. But when you actually look at the stuff, when we actually went looking in the epidemiology, in the population health patterns, for the genotox described by Nahas and others right back from 1969, it's the signal is there loud in the places that I mentioned earlier, the same issue. This is a big, loud signal for anyone who wants to take a look. And it's positive. Personally, I think it's scary. These guys are putting the stuff in the food chain, and you're talking about, you know, length of exposure, out there consent, and we know it's a known genotox. This is serious, serious business.
Yeah, we already know that adding hormones to chickens and beef and that sort of thing is and cow's milk is having an effect on our kids.
Well, people are worried about GMOs.
Yeah, and then we have this. Let me ask you this. So you're a regular user, and you smoke enough to where it is actually damaging your chromosome. That cannot be reversed. Is that correct?
Once the whippersnipper takes over, is that the end of the show?
Yeah, once the chromosomes are gone, the chromosomes are gone. I mean, the cells replicate. Some of the business of cutting chromosomes is controlled by the epigenome. Okay, everyone knows what DNA looks like. It looks like a spiral helix. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. But it's got little markers on it that turn genes on and off. And the markers are called the epigenome, the DNA methylation or the epigenome. And some of that is reversible. Now those epigenome, those gene controllers, control where the chromosomes are cut. So improving the epigenetic damage is going to improve some of this cutting. See, you have to understand that that a lot of memory, a lot of historical data is held in the epigenome on the stem cells, right? So you think about this, like we've all had COVID vaccines, so many people have had COVID vaccines now, right? But immune cells, a lot of them only live for 3 days. So how does your immune system actually remember anything if all the cells are dead in 3 days? And the answer is the information is stored on the epigenome, on the gene regulatory system on the immune stem cells. And the same in the neurons in the brain, right? They're long-living cells. They don't divide. So epigenetic memories are held fundamentally epigenetically and in the epitranscriptome, which is also in the neurons and stuff like that. But so the point is that some of that damage is potentially reversible. And if you get cells which have got busted chromosomes, they're usually progeny cells. And if the stem cells are preserved, then you could have a better outcome from the stem cells. So some of it's reversible. But as you rightly say, amputating chromosomes from any cell is a serious business. And all this stuff, you know, like your question now, is it repairable if you come good? Is it really in your stem cells or not? The science really isn't there as yet. But it's a very serious question, and obviously we shouldn't be flooding our countries with this stuff if this stuff even might be occurring.
Yeah, if we don't know, why are we messing with it? Exactly.
Well, I think that's an interesting point, though, because you look at vaccines. Okay, we won't get into the one that's out there currently, which, yeah, has all sorts of issues that we could get into, but won't, because we don't want you to wind up in a gulag somewhere in Australia. That would be bad. I'm sure we would wind up in the gulag in Australia, we're sorry, but we'll never come and visit.
Broadcasting from the gulag.
Yeah. They would have us in a heartbeat. But the thing that, what about all polio and all these things that little kids get? I mean, diseases they do not get anymore because they're vaccinated for that, for legitimate things. So, if they are exposed to, I mean, little kids are probably not, you know, eating or smoking actual marijuana, but if they're exposed to that in utero, they've got all the chromosomal damage that'll make it not be able to remember that they got these vaccines too. Is that correct?
Sort of. Yeah.
I didn't really think I was going to get an A for that, but but it's like, am I on the trail?
Yes, you're hot on the trail. Let me put it that way. Kids exposed in utero are going to have their brain function affected, and they're going to have their immune function affected, and they're going to have chromosomes affected, they're going to have their genome affected, they're going to have their epigenome affected, and they're going to have their metabolism affected, because the epigenome is run by the metabolism. Everything in the cell needs energy. Everything in the cell needs bits and pieces, right? The epigenome is run by methyl groups, one carbon groups, by acetyl groups, which is two carbon groups, by phosphate groups, by sulfate groups, by lots of over 100 groups, all of which come from the metabolism. The metabolism of the cell supplies the energy, and it supplies this the small molecule modifiers, the co-reactants and the epigenetic reactions. So that changing your metabolism, we know that cannabis changes your metabolism. Changing your metabolism changes your genome, changes your epigenome, changes your brain, and all of this is followed through. That's why we've written a book about cannabis-induced neurotoxicity and genotoxicity, and you're right. It's the kids are exposed in utero, and it comes out in the long term. And to me, this is so unfair. Right? It's so unfair.
Yeah, they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in Australia, I don't know what the sentence for murder is in America, but in Australia you get 15 years. But a mother who has a baby who's affected, who's severely autistic or has one of these severe congenital anomalies, will be chained to that child for the term of her natural life. And she maybe wasn't even told. Maybe she didn't even smoke cannabis. Maybe it was just in the food or the milk in the refrigerator, and she wasn't even knowingly exposed. This is so unfair. And I mean, in Australia, I mean, like I said, the stuff's starting to come here. It's the kids' gummy bears. It's right beside the vitamins, 2 foot off the ground in the supermarket, completely unregulated beside the brightly colored gummy bears with the genotox warning on the label where the kids are going to grab it, 2 feet off the floor with the genotox warning on the side. If people knew what genotox actually meant, it would be a different world.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Is anybody writing a book? Is anybody taking your data and turning it into a book for regular people who are not Geno speakers?
Well, at this point,
Geno dummies for dummies or something.
No, the point we're at right now, I mentioned we've got a large book which considers this epidemiology in detail. It's almost 4,000 pages long. We're presently negotiating with publishers. We've published about 10 papers in this area, which are pretty hard-hitting. There are another 10 papers before the journals, which are all going to come out, which, you know, document everything I'm talking about. So we're just at that point. And you're dead right. You know, we need a popular version that people understand. We need to, if I could accomplish one thing, which is help people understand what genotoxicity actually means. To us, it's very paradoxical. The U.S. was stars, right? The U.S. was stars in 1957 when thalidomide broke, okay? There was a Dr. Kelsey, I think her name was, at the FDA, who busted distillers and said, there is no genotox thing in your file. We're going to close you down. We're not going to allow you in the U.S. So the U.S. Avoided the thalidomide bullet, and President Kennedy awarded Dr. Kelsey the highest civilian medal of honor for that in 1957. And see, in Europe, where this sort of information is available, people are very freaked out because much of Europe was exposed to thalidomide.
Right.
So they know about genotox there, right? The US never had that nightmare experience. So now the country has been swamped with this, you know, green darkness, if I can call it that, because they don't have that knowledge in their cultural history.
Wow. It occurs to me we probably need, you know, genotoxicity for potheads should be probably the name of the book.
Well, it kind of explains.
We need somebody to put this in a.
Yeah.
But it does explain a lot of different things that are going on that people will pass that off as a lot of different causes. And they'll look at everything but this if history is a teacher.
When you speak to somebody who smokes a lot of pot, I mean, you get that kind of dopey kind of mentality, and they can't remember anything, and they're
But know, there are a lot of people who use it. They claim that it's good for cancer and all that. And we've had Dr. Philip Drum on here a bunch of times talking about how this is not a substitute for – this is not a natural substitute for anything. And if it carries this kind of a price tag, you'd be lucky if all you have is a psychotic break at this point.
Well, 10, 15 years down the road, what are we going to be looking at then?
Yeah, well, you see, there was a study published in 2018 in Substance Use and Misuse that looked at the death rate amongst cannabis users. It's 30% over 30 years. That's a pretty hard endpoint. And if you think about it, if you've got severe mental illness and all this other stuff going on, but it's part of the aging syndrome, a high death rate is obviously an age-defining illness, then this when you put it all together, when you connect these dots, you say, oh, my gosh, why didn't we see? And that's why we're doing our work, to help people connect these dots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. And we're just being completely stupid. I mean, we're knee deep in the crime side of it. But the toll, not just, I mean, besides the fact you have to live around these places and, oh, they had, you know, a little tiny town that's near one of these gigantic, you know, thousands and 5,000 greenhouses, and they've got fentanyl. A little kid, a 5-year-old, was exposed to that on a playground.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
Who has fentanyl on a playground?
Well, we recently...
Unless you're right next to a giant, you know, drug cartel.
Yeah, we recently had a couple of murders on the side of the road near
a little grow area
in our town. So, I mean, it's not a good deal.
But this is people who will not be able to be productive, not be able to care for themselves. What about all the... When you talk about the aging, does that also get in... Ah, shoot, we have to take another break again, darn it. Okay, after the break, I want to know how you think this profiles, or maybe you already know how this profiles with dementia, Alzheimer's, that kind of thing. Are we looking at earlier onset for all that? Because I'm guessing I might get a gold star on that one. I'm bucking for the gold star. That's really what I'm after after here. We will be right back. Our guest is Dr. Stuart Rees. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and all my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'd be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal.
All the gold in California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills. It's somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all where you played before. California's a brand new game.
Yep.
Yeah.
All the gold is in California.
Yep.
Yep. Only it's green.
And you know, if we were halfway smart and we made illegal cannabis cultivation a crime, we would probably see a lot of these people go away. But we seem to not make those kinds of decisions. So just in case everybody's okay with the crime, you're okay with the crime and you're okay with the get-rich-quick, because we have a lot of people in regular industry selling soil and components for greenhouses and all that.
A lot of businesses are cashing in on it.
It's the second gold rush, really, and that, I think, fuels it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So what about that was a good question.
What about the Alzheimer's and the dementia and all that? Are we speeding that up, too, since they're aging themselves?
Yes, ma'am. I'm just looking at a study here in World Psychiatry, just published a couple of weeks ago. The rate of dementia goes up fourfold.
Terrific.
Long-term cannabis use, but it's also associated with other things like other drug use and psychosis and social isolation, all of which obviously march along with cannabis. So you can see that all these, you know, together go up. And there's another one, because you've probably heard a lot about CBD and neuroprotection, and they say it's good for neuroprotection. There's another one here published in Molecular Neurobiology just last year, this time last year. And it says that, yes, in the test tube, this stuff protects, protects neurons, except when you give it to patients, they'll get poisoned. So there seems to be a hitch there. And I think of a lot of the issues. It's an area where there's ongoing damage, but at this, I mean, it's obvious. If you look at, I mean, I've got lots of mental health patients. I work in an inner city area in Brisbane, so I've got lots of chronic mental health. Some of those started with cannabis, and I've got lots of psychosis in my drug addicted population. I've got a large addiction clinic. We take care of about 600 drug addicts. And psychosis in those is very common and major. Bipolar, it's all very common. And as I said before, a lot of them currently smoke cannabis or began their addiction career with cannabis. So, you know, their brains are obviously, you know, not a long-term scenario. So the answer is really obvious when you look at these clinical populations, but it's also in the published literature as well, and it's a very clear answer.
Mm. Wow.
Do you know, have you seen any research on the treatment of PTSD with marijuana?
Yeah, I've seen papers. It's not an area where I've done a literature review, so I can't speak authoritatively on that subject, I'm afraid.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, because we've heard from other people that, you know, with the psychotic element of it and the psychotic break that can be caused, especially with the really high THC content, that's just not that's not something you want to experiment with.
Right.
I'd agree with that in general terms. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And so how do we get out of this? I mean, do we really have to get our lawmakers to understand that this needs to actually be studied? It needs to get out of the feel good element with, you know, it's good for cancer, and all this different stuff. I guess we have to get past that somehow and get into some real science.
Well, I completely agree, Aaron. I think doing what you're doing now is absolutely central. People need to understand. I mean, the industry understands it's genotoxic. That's why we need to have legal cannabis, because they know they never get past the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
But people need to understand what we're talking about, understand the dementia, understand, you know, you're talking about, I mean, autism in the US is growing exponentially. We've published a couple of papers on that, and we've done a space-time analysis on that, which is currently with the journal, and it's associated over space-time and fulfills all the causal criteria. You're talking about an exponential epidemic, and we know the cause, and we're doing nothing. You know, this doesn't make sense. I mean, you're talking about women who might be wanting to start a family, and all they did was went to the refrigerator and had a glass of milk. That's all they did wrong, and they didn't know it had cannabis in the food chain. And so they had an autistic baby, which they didn't need to have. Like Melbourne in Australia, I don't know if you know this, but one of the biggest towns in Australia is called Melbourne. It's in the south in Victoria. It's the top of the pops for no arms and no legs globally, because no arms and no legs is part of this.
Really?
Right? And if you look at no arms and no legs, the leading center in the world for that is called International Clearinghouse for Birth Defects Surveillance Research from Rome. And they did a whole review of the world history of no arms and no legs. And then they did another one of no, you know, the top part of your arm and the second part of your arm. And then just the hand where your hand is joined at the shoulder. The first two parts of the arm aren't there. That's called flipper in Latin. It's flipper limb or focamelia is Latin for flipper limb, right? Amelia is no arm, no leg. Focamelia. So two papers. Melbourne was top of the pops on that, right?
Now, is Melbourne a high use, is it legal in Australia?
Well, no. Well, it was thought not to be. But the thing is, there's a lot of migrant populations in Australia. So they didn't have – the point is they didn't have the high Amelia focamelia rates in their countries of origin. But when they got to Melbourne, they did.
Hmm.
Right? So there's a control right there. And Melbourne is surrounded with a lot of cannabis farms. Right? So our question – and I know – there are people who've been in Melbourne who're born without any arms or any legs, completely amillic, right? But he's got five kids, and they're all fine. So it's not a genetic defect in the patients. It must be something environment. Melbourne and cannabis is linked, like in three or four places in the world with no arms and no legs, right? So it must be something environment, and it'll be very interesting because there's one of the things. one of the things that when babies are formed in their, inside their mothers, there's a thing called morphogen gradients, right? There's these gradients of these chemicals which control, right, like front to back in the spinal cord. Let's talk about spinal cord for a moment. Which cell goes where? And there's a gradient comes from the skin at the back. There's a gradient comes near the aorta at the front. And between these two conflicting gradients, it specifies which cells go which. They have these gradients in three dimensions, you know, top to bottom, left to right, and front to back. And the gradients get messed up. So the same when the arm is forming inside the mother, about 22, 23 days of gestation, there's a little group of cells which release a morphogen called sonic hedgehog, and it controls limb development. And if you block sonic hedgehog, which cannabis does, if you block sonic hedgehog on day 22, 23, when the limb is about, you get no limb, and then if the cannabis block goes away, you can get a hand, but no arm or limb. So it's easy to see why we've got no arm, why amelia and focamelia are happening, because if there's a cannabinoid insult, and if it's in the food
turning it on and off as it goes.
Yeah. If you're mucking up these gradients which specify and control cell development. These gradients are well established in biology. And we know that cannabis messes with the seven main morphogen gradients, which go to form babies. And you wonder why there are dozens and dozens. In Europe, we looked at 90 birth defects, 90 and different metrics of cannabis. We were able to link with 89 of those 90 defects, right? So, but all of a sudden, there's dozens of ways that cannabis will interfere with birth development. And this stuff is just, the society's treating it, as you said a moment ago, like ka-ching. It's just cash. This is crazy from a biological and medical point of view, which is why we have the legal cannabis system to bypass all of that. And you've basically got fraud conducted by the industry at the ballot box, and that's how we've gotten it. So the answer is to your questionnaire is to do what you said. Educate people so they understand what we're talking about. Get the word out. Get it out in popular form. There was a book, there's been a couple of great books written about this in the last 40, 50 years. There's one called Pot Safari that you've probably heard of, right? But, you know, there's the genotox that was predicted in 1969 through 1999. We're now seeing in patterns of population health in multiple jurisdictions. That's the message we want to transmit. This is real. This is in your face. We've got it with the evidence we've got now. As the data becomes more current, because it's well behind, because it takes 8 years for the autism to be diagnosed, right? So of course the data is way behind where we're at currently, but with the data we've got now, overwhelmingly what we've predicted from the lab, this is a consistent pattern of evidence from the molecules, from the cells to the DNA. Cannabis mucks up the glue when the chromosomes are on the mitotic spindle at metaphase, when they separate out at anaphase. The glue that holds them there is mucked up by cannabis. So the chromosomes come unstuck. They get separated in a micronucleus. They get shattered. That becomes genetic junk that either kills the cell or causes birth defects or cancer or brain retardation. We know that. Cannabis has been known to be positive in a micronucleus assay, which is what I just said. The chromosome slips off the spindle because the glue literally came unstuck. Cannabis literally unstucks this from the kinetochore, which holds it on there. So this whole ka-ching thing, it's for the fairies, really.
Let's go a scenario. You're a high school age, we'll go with girls, high school age girl, who starts smoking pot. She's like 17, smokes pot till she gets out of college, maybe like 22, 23. Is that about right? Yeah.
Yeah.
22, 23. Then decides to have kids. What are the odds that she becomes one of your statistics? Ballpark. I know scientists don't like ballparks.
Well, it depends what you mean. You're talking about autism. You're talking about birth defects. Are you talking about transgenerational transmission of cancer, right? And the question which you didn't quite give me enough information is, what's the intensive use? Is this occasional, once a month thing, or is this a daily thing? Because if it's daily, then she is done, or perhaps multiple negative outcomes, right? These kids don't just get one birth defect. They get a whole bunch of them, and cancer. Remember, cancer is heritable, right? Acute lymphoid leukemia is most parents want to give their kids life. These parents are giving their kids cancer, right? You're not just talking about birth defects. You're talking about malignant teratogenesis, malignant mutagenesis intergenerationally for at least three or four generations. That's what the science says.
And the kids, right? And so, the kids so, actually so get the cancer.
If she is, yeah, the kids. If she is, the ALL is, it's a cancer of kids, right? And AML is strongly, is linked with cancer in several.
What is it? Always towards then the top
I
of
told
the
you, you know, you're going to get the whippersnipper or the weedy girder, whatever you call that thing, on the chromosomes in the little boy. So you're actually giving your kids not just the gift of life, but the gift of cancer, as well as, you know, 30 or 40 birth defects.
Right.
And if he's smoking, if that girl is smoking daily, she is going to be guaranteed. She's in the exponential zone, and she is going to become a social welfare burden for probably long term and her kids.
Yeah. And if she marries somebody who's also been, or, you know, has the child's father is also a cannabis user, I would imagine the odds are just straight up.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a cover up going on, right? I mean, in Northern Rivers in New South Wales, that's where they go the weed in this country. There was a photo on the front page of the newspaper. They gave the mother's name, the father's name, and the baby's name. And mum sitting there straight as a die. She looks like a real straight. She says, I don't know. I didn't take any of my pregnancy. And the father's there looking for all the world like a pothead. And he's got something around his neck, which looks to me like a satchel of weed. And mum's saying, I didn't know anything wrong in pregnancy. And it was cannabis. The world literature is screaming cannabis. In fact, in Canada, after multivariate adjustment, the rate of cannabis use was three times higher for gastroschisis, and at univariate adjustment for bivariate association, it was nine times higher. So dad's sitting there with weed around his neck. Mum's saying, I didn't know anything wrong with pregnancy. All the girlfriends are saying, you're a bad mum because you had this. And the baby's got his guts hanging out, right?
Wow.
And everyone's saying, wow. I didn't do nothing wrong. And then what's worse is the health department goes, this is what happened in Sydney, New South Wales, and they dodgy stats to cover it all up. And mucked up this statistical analysis completely as a giant cover-up. And yet the world literature screams that we know that cannabis is linked with it. It's insane, and it's very unfair on the mothers.
Yeah. Yeah, very unfair. And on the kids and everybody else. So anybody who's putting this all forward as a no big problem, you know, all these pot shops everywhere basically telegraphing to children that this is just a product. You go buy it at the store. Dr. Reese, we have hit the wall here. We're out of time, but we would love to have you back on. We'd love to, make people aware of your research, and we thank you for, getting up at the crack of dawn, for us and, joining us on Zoom. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Reese.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure being on your show. Thank you.
We really learned a lot. You're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Hey, that was my part.